All right, get ready, because today we're going deep into the world of electronic discovery. You know, e-discovery. We're talking about those mountains of digital data that can make or break a legal case. And the million-dollar question, who pays for going through all of it?
It really is a fascinating issue because it's a relatively new challenge, isn't it? Just a few decades ago, the sheer volume of digital information we generate today, totally unimaginable.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. And to illustrate that point, let's look at a really important case, Laura Zubelik versus UBS Warburg. This case got a lot of attention. Zubelik, a former employee, accused UBS of gender discrimination and retaliation, seeking a pretty hefty $13 million in damages. But here's the thing. UBS employees at the time were receiving something like 200 emails daily.
Wow.
Every single day.
That's a lot. Yeah, this case really highlights that tension in modern litigation, balancing those broad discovery rights, meaning parties can request a wide range of digital documents and data, but then you have the potential for astronomical costs. When you factor in thousands upon thousands of emails, some of them potentially stored on those hard-to-access backup tapes.
Right, and that's exactly what our deep dive today focuses on, cost shifting and e-discovery.
Yeah.
So should the requesting party, Zubelik in this instance, be solely responsible for retrieving those potentially crucial emails? Or should it be the responding party, UBS, who effectively has all this data?
It's a really good question. I mean, the Zubelik case really forced courts to figure out how to balance the right to access potentially relevant information with the potentially enormous costs of getting to it. And the decisions made in this case really set a precedent that we still see shaping how we approach e-discovery today.
It's true. It's amazing to see how much things have changed. To appreciate that, I actually came across this quote by Henry David Thoreau from 1849. He said, quote, "The process of discovery is very simple. It's incredible how different things are now."
Oh, absolutely. Judge Shindlin, the judge who oversaw the Zubelik case, would often quote Thoreau to illustrate how simple our view of discovery was before the digital age. Thoreau's world, you know, handwritten letters and those simple ledgers, is worlds apart from today's terabytes of data. It's just a complete total explosion of electronic data, coupled with the fact that the cost of storage is just plummeting. It's completely reshaped discovery.
Right, right. It does make you wonder what Thoreau would think of e-discovery today. But before we go too far, I think it's important to clarify something. Not all electronic data is made equally. There's a really important distinction between accessible and inaccessible data.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, you can almost think of it as a spectrum. Active files on your computer, like documents in a well-organized filing cabinet, super easy to get to. But deleted files, while you can potentially get to them, require a lot more effort. And then there are things like backup tapes, the digital equivalent of searching for a needle in a haystack.
Right. And those backup tapes became a major issue in the Zubelik case, didn't they?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
UBS kept emails in three formats. Active user files, which were pretty easy. Archived emails on optical disks, which were, you know, manageable. And then those backup tapes.
Right. The backup tapes were the real challenge. Each tape could take days to restore. You needed special software just to extract the emails.
Okay. So shifting gears a little bit.
Yeah.
Let's talk about this cost shifting debate. Should courts just automatically say, hey, requesting party, you want those emails, you pay for it? I mean, it seems like that could create such an imbalance, especially for individuals going up against large corporations.
Yeah, I think that's a valid point. There are a lot of good arguments against automatic cost shifting. For one, it could really deter individuals from pursuing legitimate claims. Imagine you're going up against a company like UBS. They've got tons of resources. And you know that you might have to shell out hundreds of thousands of dollars just to get to potentially key evidence. You might think twice about even filing a lawsuit.
Yeah, it's kind of a scary thought. It could create a system where justice is basically available to the highest bidder.
Yeah.
Regardless of what actually happened.
Exactly. And that's why courts have developed these more nuanced approaches to figure out when cost shifting is actually appropriate. It's about striking that balance, you know? And one approach that courts have used is this thing called the Roe test. It's a set of eight factors traditionally used to figure out whether to shift e-discovery costs to the requesting party. But even this test, like a lot of legal frameworks, has been debated a lot over the years.
Right. And it was Judge Shindlin herself who proposed modifications to that test, right?
Yeah.
It seems like she was really pushing for a more modern approach to e-discovery.
Oh, absolutely. She argued that the Roe test was incomplete. It didn't really account for all the nuances of eDiscover, especially when it came to things like backup tapes. So she streamlined it down to 7 factors and really emphasized this idea of marginal utility.
And for our listeners who aren't legal experts, could you explain what marginal utility means in this context?
Sure. It's basically about weighing the potential benefit of accessing data against the cost of actually retrieving it. So, like with those backup tapes, we're asking, how likely is it that they actually have information that's relevant and useful to the case?
Okay, so it's not just assuming that every backup tape is a treasure trove of evidence.
Yeah.
You have to consider the likelihood of finding something valuable.
Yeah, exactly. And in the Zuba Lake case, Judge Scheinlin came up with a pretty innovative solution this test run. She ordered UBS to produce emails from a sample of backup tapes. Before making a final decision on who would pay for the whole thing, it was a way to gather actual data, rather than just relying on assumptions.
That's interesting. It seems like she was trying to find a practical solution. That acknowledged the challenges of e-discovery in the digital age, almost like a test run for justice. So how did this new 7-factor test actually work in practice?
Well, the first 2 factors really focus on what we were just talking about, that marginal utility. Factor 1 basically asks, how specific is the discovery request? Is it super focused on finding particular relevant information? Or is it just a really broad request, hoping to find something useful?
So a more targeted request is less likely to result in cost shifting, right?
Yeah.
Because the requesting party is being very specific about what they need.
Exactly. And then factor 2 kind of builds on that by asking, is this information available from other sources that are easier to access? Maybe those important emails exist in paper form somewhere, or they were forwarded to someone whose computer is easy to access.
It makes sense if you're asking a company to search through backup tapes for something that's readily available elsewhere. It seems like the court might not be as sympathetic.
Absolutely. Then factors 3 and 4 bring in the financial side of things. Factor 3 compares the total cost of producing the data to the amount of money at stake in the lawsuit. So if going through all those backup tapes is going to cost a fortune, but the damages being sought are relatively small, a court might be more likely to shift the cost.
So it's about proportionality, right?
Yeah.
Spending hundreds of thousands of dollars on e-discovery in a case worth a few thousand just doesn't make sense.
Right, exactly. And then factor 4 takes it a step further. By comparing the cost of producing the data to the resources each party has, it recognizes that what might be a huge expense for an individual could be a drop in the bucket for a big corporation.
So this factor is trying to level the playing field a bit, preventing parties with a lot of money from using e-discovery to bury their opponents in legal fees.
Yeah, it's an important consideration. Factor 5 then looks at which party has more control over the costs of e-discovery. Usually it's the responding party, the one with the data. Who's in a better position to understand how that data is stored and how much it'll cost to get to it?
So this factor kind of encourages both sides to work together.
Yeah.
To make the process more efficient and keep costs down.
Exactly. Nobody wants to waste time and money on procedures that aren't necessary. Now, factor 6 is a little different. It considers how important the issues in the case are. It recognizes that sometimes the stakes are so high, the public interest is so significant, that worrying about the cost is less important.
I imagine this might apply to cases involving things like public health, environmental disasters, maybe even national security. In those situations, getting the information, even if it's expensive, might be more important than the cost.
Exactly. And then finally, factor 7, which is probably the least important, looks at the relative benefits to each party. Will getting this information mainly benefit the requesting party, or will the responding party also gain something valuable from it?
So it's acknowledging that e-discovery isn't always a zero-sum game. Sometimes both sides can benefit from getting to the information.
Yeah, that's a good point. But it's important to remember that even though this 7-factor test is a helpful tool, it's not just a simple formula. It requires looking at the specific facts of each case.
It sounds like Judge Scheinlin's modifications to the Roe test were really trying to make the system more adaptable and fairer, especially in a world where technology is constantly changing.
Oh yeah, for sure. Her focus on proportionality, her willingness to try new solutions like the test run, and her emphasis on fairness for all parties, those are all really important lessons. And they've had a lasting impact on how courts handle e-discovery today.
It really shows how e-discovery isn't just some legal thing. It's something that affects all of us, especially in this digital age. Whether you're a lawyer, a business owner, or just someone who uses email and social media,
yeah.
You know, e-discovery is something to be aware of.
Absolutely. I mean, every email you send, every text, every photo you upload, all of it could become evidence in a legal case. It's wild. But understanding the rules can really help you navigate those situations, whether you're requesting information or responding to a request.
Right. So as we wrap up this deep dive, what are some key takeaways our listeners should remember?
I think the biggest one is that e-discovery is here to stay. Our lives are just so intertwined with technology now. The amount of electronic data involved in legal cases is only going to keep growing.
And that means figuring out how to manage those costs, which we've seen can be pretty substantial.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Cost shifting is a complex issue. There are no easy answers. Courts have to really think carefully about balancing the need for access to information with the potential burden of those costs.
It does seem like Judge Scheinlin's rulings in the Zubelate case provide a really valuable framework for how to approach these challenges. Her focus on marginal utility, her willingness to try new things like that test run, and her emphasis on making sure it's fair for everyone, those are all really important lessons.
I agree. Her decisions really change things, and they continue to influence how we handle e-discovery today.
So next time you hit send on that email or post that picture online, maybe take a second to think about what it could mean down the road. You might be creating evidence that could be relevant in a legal case later on.
That's a good point. And if you ever find yourself involved in a lawsuit, remember what we've talked about. Be mindful of the costs of e-discovery. Be proactive in managing those costs. And be ready to push for a fair and balanced approach.
This has been a fascinating look at the world of e-discovery. It's complex and it's always changing. But hopefully we've helped explain some of the key issues and how they might affect you.
Yeah, and as technology continues to evolve, it'll be interesting to see how e-discovery adapts. It's definitely an area that's going to keep raising those important questions about access to information, privacy, and fairness in our increasingly digital world.
Well said. Thanks for joining us for this deep dive. We hope you found it insightful and maybe even a little fun.
It's been a pleasure chatting with you. Until next time.